Hey, this is Cooper Smith. I'm one of the student worship pastors at Eastview, and I'm honored to welcome you to our Eastview Students High School podcast. We hope this is encouraging, inspiring, and helpful for you in your walk with Christ. Enjoy the message.
Everybody doing okay? Good. So good to be here with you guys. One of the things, I was standing in the back thinking about this, I love about Sundays is that not only like in this room are we singing songs, praying, just thanking God, not only in this church building, not only in our area, not only in our country, but in our world right now, there's churches all over that are doing this. And it's so good to think about the fact that we are part of something so much bigger going on. It's really, really good. So thank you for you know, all that you do when it comes to just proclaiming Jesus this morning. So it's so good to be here with you guys. I'm going to tell you about the year was 1983, okay? 1983 was the year, and at this time, there was a magazine called U.S. News. Maybe you've heard of it, maybe you've seen it a little bit, but U.S. News was not really even considered one of the top magazines available in publication. It couldn't stand up to Time magazine. Some of you guys might know Time magazine, okay? Pretty popular. Couldn't stand up to Newsweek. Newsweek also was a dominating magazine. National Geographic, another one that was like, okay, that's pretty good. Maybe you know National Geographic because of the Disney Plus now, okay? Like, maybe that's where you know. It couldn't even stand up to People. Like, People magazine was still super popular. And U.S. News was just kind of like floundering a little bit. But it decided to make, you know, the top executives of U.S. News, the creatives of U.S. News, got together and said, hey, what if we did something that nobody else is doing right now? What if we project what the best colleges and universities are in the country, and then we create just a special magazine for that, so that every junior and every senior in high school, every freshman and every sophomore that is attending a junior college could look at this magazine and say, this is the best option. These are the best options for me academically moving forward. So they came together and they said, okay, let's do this. But how do we do this? So like most creative people do, they created this this plan and the system, and they looked at it and said, okay, what is the best idea for us to do this? They created an algorithm, and they started going around, and they started figuring out which is the best school. Now, if you're a senior, maybe you've seen this or heard of this. Maybe some of your guidance counselors have said, hey, check this out when it comes. And what it does is it gives you a list and it gives you a breakdown of what are the best colleges and universities that you could possibly attend. You know, at the top, you usually see the Yales, the Princetons, you know, like those, the Harvards, you know. And then you have like the Harvards of the Midwest, like Illinois State University. Go Redbirds, okay? thank you to the one person. That's great. I got my degree there, which makes me here, okay? So there we go. So I look at this, like you think about these colleges and you think about these universities, and you're just like, okay, so they created this algorithm and this system to completely look at statistically what is the best thing about these different universities, different colleges, and they clumped them all together. And then they did something else. Every year, even this year, 2021, a president of a university will receive a packet from U.S. News with a questionnaire that asks them about different colleges around the world. So you could be the president of the University of North Carolina, and you could be asked about the University of California, San Francisco. And that University of North Carolina president maybe has never been to San Francisco. Maybe has never been on the campus of University of California, San Francisco, but all of a sudden, he or she is asked to rate this college. So automatically they're like, well, San Francisco, I guess they got the Giants. They're number one right now in the division. I guess we'll give them a good grade, okay? Maybe this North Carolina president gets an option to say, well, what do you think about Duke? And if you know anything about sports, okay, this North Carolina president is not going to give Duke a good recommendation, okay? At least until Coach K retires at the end of this year. But for right now, the Zion Williamsons and the Christian Leitners of the world make this North Carolina president not think very highly of Duke, okay? Or what about the president of U of I? Like, maybe he's thinking, okay, I need you to rate UCLA. I don't know. I don't know anything about UCLA. I guess they've got cool colors, and they're the Bruins, which is nice. Okay, I'll give them a high rate. Everything that they do is based off of the opinion of other university presidents, even if they know nothing about them. One of my favorite authors and sociologists, Malcolm Gladwell, did a deep dive into this and started looking at the power of the opinion and how the power of a president of a university's opinion completely shapes a lot of your future. If you're a senior today and you're trying to figure out, okay, where does U of I rank on this list? Because that matters to me. But what you don't understand is that the president of the University of Wisconsin gave University of Illinois a really low rank because he really doesn't like the Illini. Okay? So all of these things come into the factors that put together this magazine that is totally rising up when it comes to juniors and seniors and high schools that purchase this magazine every year. There's one story that Gladwell found of this president of this small school in the South, and he had a recipe that his grandma had made for hot sauce. And everybody around him loved his hot sauce, loved his grandma's hot sauce. So what he did was he had his admin package up a bunch of hot sauces and send them around to different university presidents and say, hey, I want you to like my hot sauce. Side note, if you like my hot sauce, can you give me a good review in the U.S. News and College World Report coming out? People loved his hot sauce. So immediately, his university jumped from like the mid-100s up until the early 100s. Okay, it's all about opinion within this. Isn't opinion like an amazing thing? Like when it comes to what we think of other people, isn't that like crazy? Like, what we think of other people is what defines who other people are. What university presidents thinks of other presidents around different universities defines what they look like on this very, very critical list for juniors and seniors in high school. We live in this world where if you think about it, the way that we look at each other and the opinion of others is so important. This question that we're trying to look at today, who am I, is a great question that we all ask ourselves. How is it, though, that we live in a culture where we can go to a social media platform and we can see so much confidence in ourselves, so much look at me, so much joy and hope in the person that we're looking at, but we read stories and we see statistics that we're living in the same culture that's full of people that are living with extremely low self-esteem and low confidence of who they are. It's kind of this irony, this incredible irony that we can post about all of who we are, but when someone asks us who we are, we can't confidently articulate it. Like seriously, if somebody comes up to you and says, hey, how are you? Who are you? Like immediately, like, I don't know how you are, but I kind of shudder to that. Like, I don't do that. That's kind of weird. It's like, are you singing to me? Are you talking in tongues? What are we doing? No, I just don't know how to necessarily answer that right now. Because there is so much lack of confidence in my life that when you ask me how I'm doing, I so want to proclaim to you that I'm okay. I so want you to believe that everything that I post on my social media platforms communicates who I really am and I'm really doing okay. But the irony is that there's a huge difference in who we think we should be and who we think we are, okay? A huge difference in who we think we should be and who we think we are. Not sure if you live in that world, the world where you think very little about yourself, but as long as you do not let others know that, then you're okay, right? As long as other people, you know, think you're okay, then all is okay. Really, who do you think you are? Like, have you asked yourself that question? Like this idea of who do we think we are? What is that perception about what others think impact you? Like if somebody loves you today, if you're just like flowing and people's like appreciation and, you know, people are just, you know, raising you up and lifting you up. You look great today. It's like, darn right I do. Heck yeah. I look great. But inside you're just like, man, I am dying. But as long as you think this of me, at least it's okay. We are in this place where what others tell us about who we are impacts our relationships, our emotions, our day-to-day lives, and obviously which college we think is best in the United States. At the heart of everything about you, at the heart of everything about you, how are you? Who are you? Who am I? I wonder what Moses, we've been talking about Moses, and I wonder what Moses thought about himself. He had a heck of a life. He was born a Hebrew. He was given up by his family as a kid. Like his mom literally put him in a basket and said, I am shipping you off, okay? Now, in his mom's mind, it was to save him. But who knows what Moses thought about was he was growing up as this kid that his mom, like, let him go. So he was pushed off by his family, and then he was raised in royalty. Like he was a Hebrew, but he was raised in royalty. But then he was a murderer. He killed somebody. And then he ran away. He fled. So he was a coward. And then he lived in the desert for 40 years, and he was walking around with somebody else's sheep. Not only somebody else's, but his father-in-law's. So the only job he could get was his father-in-law felt sorry for him and said, hey, can you be my shepherd? Can you walk around with my sheep aimlessly all the time? What did he think of himself? Did he have a high esteem for himself? We see in Exodus 3 when he meets God, like when he meets God in the burning bush, we see this in verse 10 through 12, that God communicates to Moses, I see the afflictions and the pain of my family, my people. Like, I see what's going on with my people, and it hurts me. And Moses, I am calling you to go to Egypt and help free my people. Go tell Pharaoh that he needs to let my people go. And Moses, as Moses is, he looks at this moment as this great task, and Moses asks this simple question, who am I? Who am I? Who am I called to be? Who am I to have a purpose? A shepherd? A murderer? Who am I? Like, why God? Why God would you call me? God calls him to something. And I think he goes into thinking about a few things. One, the opposition. Pharaoh, the most powerful man in the world. Like, he had to go up to this dude and say, hey, you need to let all your slaves go. There was an opposition to that. Who am I to go against opposition? The size of the task. Millions of people. He had to lead out of Egypt. That's a huge task. And then the unknown. As soon as that dude who killed somebody walks back into Egypt, they might look at him and say, there's the murderer. Kill him. Or who knows what Pharaoh is going to say? Like, who am I to lead these people out when I don't even know what the heck is going to go on, God? We see a man that didn't feel like he was worthy. It's like this, like Moses is like, you got the wrong guy. Or, hey, you're not that guy, pal. Okay? Like one of those moments where it's just like, I'm not that guy, pal. Like, I can't do this. I don't know what I'm doing. But we see how God responds to his pushback, this lack of belief in God helping his unbelief. And we see this response in Exodus 4, 1 through 9. And I love this. I want to read this to you because I think that it's so important. But Moses protested again. You ever protest against God and then feel guilty? Like, you're just like, oh man, I shouldn't have said that to God. But here we see Moses doing that, okay? So Moses protested again. And you know what God didn't do? He didn't strike him dead in that moment. Okay, so if you go to God right now and you're just like, God, I don't know what I'm doing here. I don't know who you are. I don't know what's going on. I think that that's okay. Okay, so Moses goes and protested again. What if they won't believe me or listen to me? What if they say the Lord never appeared to you? Then the Lord asked him, what is in your hand? A shepherd's staff, Moses replied. Throw it down on the ground, the Lord told him. So Moses threw the staff down and turned into a snake. Moses jumped back. I'd jump back too. Confession, I hate snakes. I don't care how big the snake is. I don't care if it's a garden snake. I don't care if it's a cobra. I don't care if it's a boa. Just get me the heck out of there. Okay, Moses, I'm feeling you on this one. Verse 4, then the Lord told him, reach out and grab its tail. Heck no, Matt McClain would say. Moses, though, reached out and grabbed it and turned back into the shepherd's staff in his hand. Perform this sign, the Lord told him. Then they will believe that the Lord, the God of your ancestors, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, really has appeared to you. Then the Lord said to Moses, now put your hand inside your cloak. So Moses put his hand inside of his cloak and then took it out again. His hand was white as snow with severe skin disease. Verse 7, now put your hand back in your cloak, the Lord says. So Moses put his hand back in the cloak, and when he took it out again, it was healthy as the rest of his body. The Lord said to Moses, if they do not believe you and are not convinced by the first miraculous sign, they will be convinced by the second sign. And if they do not believe you or listen to you, even after the two signs, then take some water from the Nile River and pour it out onto the dry ground. When you do, the water from the Nile will turn to blood on the ground. So God decided to prove to Moses two things. That he wasn't alone in his task. Something important to know. God calls you to something. You're not alone in your task. God calls Moses and said, Moses, I've got something that I want you to communicate and show to you, but also something that I'm going to be with you that you can show and communicate to others. It's important to know that. He's not alone in his task. The power of God was going to be present. Number two, even in our insecurities, God proves faithful. These truths are important, guys, because they're important to know, because even with all the help self books that you might read or the podcasts that you might listen to, you can have all the coaches and teachers and pastors speaking encouragement into your life. You can have all the TED Talks and YouTube influencers telling you you're great, but without knowing that God believes in you and has a purpose for you, these opinions of confidence will fall away quickly. They'll just go away. They'll just go away. The Bible is full of people who God used, even though they might not have been seen as usable. Do you feel usable this morning? You feel like if God called you to do something, you are usable this morning? Because God called a lot of people. He used murderers, adulterers, drunks, idol worshipers, hookers, robbers. Through God, they found purpose. They found freedom. They found hope. I think the first thing that we need to do is stop pretending that we know what greatness is. We need to stop pretending that portraying something of greatness does not mean greatness. That if we say that we're okay, but we're really not okay, that doesn't mean like everything's okay. It's important to understand that even in our securities, we can still believe that we can attain greatness. But greatness and pride is not greatness in what Christ is all about. Greatness and understanding who we are, that we are broken. So who am I? I'm broken. Moses was like, I'm broken. I have nothing to give you. I'm a shepherd and a murderer, and I have no idea what my heritage is because I'm both royal and Hebrew. I'm broken. But God says you have a purpose. I'm broken, but I have a purpose. There's this little area outside of Jerusalem called Nazareth. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's a small town that offered very little to society. Okay, anyone who lived there didn't have anything to bring to others. It was made fun of. People from Nazareth were made fun of because they didn't have anything. Okay, you can think maybe like a really small town in central Illinois where you're just like, I know nothing or nobody that ever came out of there. Okay, I know nothing that ever does. Okay, but the name of the town came from the word Netzer. Okay, and Netzer matters because it means a branch or a shoot. This kind of tiny plant that grew in the Middle East. And what would happen was someone would cut down a tree. Okay, so someone would come in and cut down a tree. And in the middle of this tree, this little netzer would grow up. It was this little like branch, this little shoot. And it was tiny, so no one cared about it. Okay, it was like, okay, well, out of destruction, like we already killed this tree. Let's just move on. Let's go away. People laughed at people who were from Netzer, from Nazareth, because even though the name was this picture of this small and pathetic little plant coming out of this cut down tree, you know, it came from Nazareth was Jesus. Remember that nothing good was supposed to come out of here. Like somebody even said when they were introduced to this man named Jesus, can anything good come out of Nazareth? That was the reception and the reputation that Jesus began with. The unusual thing about this name of the city was that this branch, this shoot that came out of it from this tree was actually a sign of hope. Like in with destruction of this tree came this little shoot, this little branch of hope. Something of life had formed out of death. Something of life was growing out of something of destruction. Listen, you may not believe in yourself, but God does. And God has a purpose for you. And just like the shoot brought hope to destruction, Jesus brings hope in our destruction. And he believes that you can be a part of bringing hope to this world, even if you think very little about who you are and where you came from. He thinks of you highly. That's the second thing to know today. The first thing is to remember, like, I am broken, but I have a purpose. The second thing I hope you remember is that he thinks of you highly this morning. He even considers you his child. We see this in 1 John chapter 3. He says, "See how very much the Father loves us, for he has called us his children." And that's what we are. God thinks so highly of you. He's called you children. He's placed something on you that's important. I'm going to get my wallet out real quick, and I'm going to get a dollar out, okay? Now, this is mine. I didn't steal it from the offering plate. Not that we do offering plates anymore, but you get what I'm saying, okay? It's my money. Like, it's my money. Somebody gave me this money. Actually, my wife gave me this money. She's like, "This is your allowance." Okay, I'm 41. I get an allowance, y'all. Hey, shoot high. Shoot high in life. Okay, I get an allowance when you're 41. The United States government has said this is a dollar. Okay, would anyone like this dollar? Okay, come on up here. Yeah. Hey, hold on real quick. I got another option for you. Okay. Here you go. This piece of paper has $10,000 written on it.
Take the paper, bro.
$10,000. Oh, so I want to ask you, do you want, which do you want?
Oh, I want this one.
You want the $10,000?
Oh, yeah. That's $10,000.
That's $10,000. Okay. All right. Hey, everybody give it up, because go ahead. Okay. Go ahead. Here's the thing about this that's foolish about that decision. This dollar has authority to mean something, has authority to have value. Someone with authority attributed value to this money. I have no value. He's going to take that piece of paper with 10,000, a number, 10,000 written on it to the bank and say, "Hey, somebody gave me this and said that I could have $10,000 right now." And the bank's going to look at him and either do one of two things. One, say no, or two, call the cops. Okay? So one of two things is going to happen in this moment, because somebody might think he's crazy. Listen, look, here's the thing. The creator of all things, the one with authority in all things, has given you a title. And that title is child of God. Like, the one with authority, the same one, you know, that says to us, like, "I am loved, I am accepted, I am cared for," is loving us enough to say that by my authority, I consider you a child of God. And more than that, God has authority to call you who you are, not some punk in your English class, not some troll on social media, not someone who's just going to randomly say, "Hey, this is what I think about you." No. God has given you a title. A child of God is who you are. And the confidence, God has confidence in you this morning. I want you to know that as his child, he has confidence in you. Are you going to screw up? Yep. Are you going to sway away from him? Yep. But does God love you? Yep. Does God have confidence in you? Yep. Does God have a purpose for you? Yep. Just like Moses, God could have called anyone else, but God chose Moses. Of all the people in the world, God chose Moses. And here today, God is choosing you. God is choosing you with a purpose that he has for you. So this week, when you feel less than, just remember you're chosen. Just remember you're a child of God. So this week, when you feel like you have nothing to offer, just remember you're called. You're called to something greater. And then this week, when you feel like you have no purpose, just remember that God is calling you to one. So who am I? I'm called. I have a purpose. I'm God's child. And I'm one that God has confidence in moving forward. That's who I am. Let me pray for you. God, we thank you that even in the midst of our doubt, even in the midst of our questioning about who we are and maybe who you are, you still love us. You still call us to something greater than anything that this world could ever give us. You still call us to a purpose. Even when our world, even in our world, like personally, like we don't feel like we have one. How do you move us forward towards something? And I don't know what that looks like for this group of students here, but I believe you're working in a way that is moving us towards something. So God, in all of us, all of our lives, God, this week, when those moments of doubt about who we are come up, remember Moses. Remember what God responded to Moses and just said, hey, I have authority to call you to something of purpose. And God is still doing that today in the lives of these students. So help us in that, God. Amen.
Well, everyone, thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the message, we'd love it if you would join us on Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. for our Eastview Students High School service. We also want to invite you to subscribe to the podcast and share it to your social media accounts. To stay up to date, check us out on Instagram at EastviewHSM and check out our Eastview Students YouTube channel. Thanks again for listening and have a great week.